This is Jeff Fedotin with Believe in Chiefs on the Believe Network, Kansas City's number one sports podcast network. The only place with a show for every team in KC and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? On this week's show, Kansas City Chiefs Hall of Famer and author of View from the Center, Tim Grunhard, joins former Kansas City Chiefs lineman Joe Valerio on our show. Tim, thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, it's great to be on with you guys. It's good to see you, Joe. Joe's doing a great job on 810 WHB every week, and I enjoy listening to him. And Jeff, thank you so much. You and your company, Triumph Books, have just done an unbelievable job of helping me get this book out. I know we're going to talk about it, but I wanted to make sure to thank you, and then thank everybody at the office. Went and met with you guys a couple of weeks ago. Great people over there, man. You guys do a wonderful job.
Well, thanks so much, Tim, and great having you on the show. You mentioned Joe's 810 radio gig. You know, Tim, you were a second-round pick, lineman chosen by the Chiefs, have had such a successful career on radio on 810. Joe, also a second-round lineman, now he's appearing on the 810. Is he, like, stepping on your toes a little bit here? What's the deal?
Well, you know what? That's been Joe's kind of MO since he first got into Kansas City. We're not going to go through his story again because I'm sure everybody's like, not again, please. But, you know, I mean, Joe used to score all these touchdowns and he'd be, you know, we'd be walking up the tunnel together and I'd be all beat up and sore, blood coming out of my ears and my nose. And Joe would walk up and all these little kids would run up to get Joe's autograph and they just walk right by me. So, you know, I said, Joe, I said, you know, that's what happens. You know how many touchdowns I scored, Joe, in 4 years of Pop Warner, 4 years of high school, 4 years of college, and 11 years in the NFL? Zero. So Joe certainly has that on me.
Tim, I have been trying to follow in your footsteps ever since, my man. We say this on the show all the time. You were my role model. You were my mentor. You were the guy that helped keep me around in the league. You know, as a small school guy who still to this day says that Penn could not beat Penn State or Notre Dame. I've heard anybody says, I'm getting that out right now. But Tim, you were such a role model, such an inspiration for not just the Chiefs. You just epitomized the bring your lunch pail offensive line mentality to that city. And Tim, you were literally one of the building blocks that brought this organization to where it is today, favored to win Super Bowls, favored to win AFCs. You know, you were the guy that they built that whole line around. I don't care what anybody says. You were the pivot point. I know there were some veterans that were there, you know, Alty and Lutz and Baldinger and all those guys. But Tim, no doubt you were the pivot. No pun intended, because you were the center. But you were the guy right at the middle of that rebuild that really epitomized what the city was all about and got Marty Ball going. And Tim, for that, I will always be indebted to you, man, for the mentorship and taking me under your wing and showing me how it should be done. And not just in football, but in life, my man.
Well, we're all about puns today because of you from the center and the book we're going to talk a little bit about. And Joe, I always felt it was important to, you know, pass it on. And Mike Webster did it to me. It's a great story in here, how Mike pretty much saved my career. And there's just a lot of great people. And you talk about how the football in the 90s kind of built the foundation for this kingdom, Chiefs kingdom. Guys like you, Joe, and guys like, you know, Joe Montana and Marcus Allen and Derek Thomas and Neil Smith and Dan Salyamua and Dave Zott. Talk about all those guys in the book and how we built this foundation, which was so important back then, because in the 80s, the foundation was cracked. The foundation was falling apart. And Marty and Carl came in with a guy named Tim Conley. I don't know if you remember Tim, but Tim Conley was an expert at marketing and said, hey, listen, we've got to get the fan seats. And it's not, can't be just with wins and losses. It's got to, they have to be invested in the product. They have to be invested in the team. And that was what was so important to Marty and Carl, is to get the players out. Joe, you did it too. I mean, we went out into the community. We went to high schools, went to hospitals, did radio shows. You know, we ran into people at the Price Chopper or the Hen House or the Hy-Vee, it was kind of a point of emphasis for us to make sure you make people feel comfortable. And I always felt comfortable in that role. And I talk a little bit about a story in the book. And listen, once again, I don't want to say anything negative about an ex-football player who actually passed away, but Walter Payton, I waited in line for 2.5-3 hours to get an autograph from Walter Payton one time at the Evergreen Park Mall in Chicago. And, I was about 8 or 9 years old. I had this photo of him that you had to buy when you got into the mall, and you bought the photo and you walked up, and that's how you, you know, I, obviously he got paid, but, you know, he signed the autograph. And, you know, gosh, it was a 2-hour line. So, I mean, I'm sure he was miserable by the time this 2 hours. Both of us have done autograph things, and after a while you get tired. I mean, but you have to force yourself to make eye contact and, you know, and be representing yourself or represent the team. And he kind of just signed it and pushed it on, never really looked up. And it wasn't disappointed. I was just like, you know, this is my idol. I just wanted to make eye contact. I just wanted him to know that I was there for him. And he didn't really respond. And I, from that point on, I said, if I were ever in this opportunity, I am going to be the kind of guy that when you come up to me, as I'm going to give you eye contact, I'm going to say hello, shake a hand, ask how you're doing, and then sign. But it makes a difference. And that's what we tried to do here in the book, is talk about why we did those things and why this Chiefs Kingdom came about. It was really important. As you look at, gosh, I love your background, and you see all those fans in the stands. I remember in the 80s, I mean, they didn't have anybody in the stands. They had to rotate people around so the TV shots looked good, you know, because there was nobody there. And then now you and I have been able to play in just unbelievable atmospheres at Arrowhead Stadium. And it all really started with those guys in the 90s that built the foundation for this kingdom.
Absolutely, Tim. So what, you know, obviously, look, you stayed in the city, you raised your family there, you know, you made that your home. And I know how much that meant to the Chiefs Kingdom, and you're coaching football there. Like, you have given back. I mean, tell us about the inspiration to share this stuff with the new generation of fans, because there's a whole generation of fans that knows the story because they saw you live it, you know, while your career was going on. And then was it really just that desire to pass along all those great things, the foundation that you talked about, and that was the inspiration for the book?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, that was really the inspiration. And there's a whole generation of Chiefs fans that now go to the game that, you know, weren't around, obviously, during the 90s. So they didn't experience that rebirth of the kingdom. And we just wanted to explain to them, you know, who was responsible and why we did it and how we did it and how important it was for us to get people back excited about being Kansas City Chiefs. Like I said, listen, we didn't win any Super Bowls in the 90s. You know, we won a lot of football games, but you know, the personal relationships that were built, Joe, through these radio shows. And listen, I guess you could call it social influencers, because there was no social media back then. The way that you got out into the community is by, you know, getting in your car and driving and going over to restaurants or sports bars or going to hospitals or high schools or going to events, you know, and selling the product, which was not only the Kansas City Chiefs, but it was us. We sold the product to get people here. And I just want to let people know about the guys like Joe Montana, how much they loved being in Kansas City, like Marcus Allen, how much he loved being in Kansas City. I wanted to tell the stories of the untold stories of the John Alts of the world who played here, and the Dan Celiamuas who played here, and the Dave Zotts who played here. So that was really important to me, is to share a little bit about the history of the Chiefs for this new generation of Chiefs fan. And Joe, I listen to you. I listen to you on 810, and I listen to you on your podcast. I really do. And the energy and enthusiasm and the love for the game that you have is contagious. Our job as ex-NFL players or alumni of the NFL is to keep selling our product. And if you can say one thing during a radio show or a podcast that makes somebody enjoy the game a little bit more, whether they're sitting in the stands or watching on TV, then you've done your job. You know, I've had people say, hey, you know, Granny, you talked about how if that defensive end was shifting inside, that they were going to bring some pressure off the edge. And I saw that happen. I was like, wow, hey, check this out. They're going to blitz here. And they did. And it just made them feel good that they understood the concept of what was trying to go on in the game. Mm-hmm. And our job is to get people to love this football game, not only love the Kansas City Chiefs, but love the NFL and love this game of football that gave us so much.
One of the cool things, how Tim talks about in the book about establishing Chiefs Kingdom. I mean, there's a whole generation of Chiefs fans that all they know really is Patrick Mahomes, or maybe a little bit further back at Andy Reid. I grew up, you know, rooting for you guys, and I'm old enough that I remember the lean years. So how exciting you guys re-energized, or really just energized the fan base that was used to losing, tailgating scene, like Tim said, getting out in the community. So I think it's awesome that this is discussed in View from the Center. And we're going to get more into View from the Center and the current Chiefs. But first, a quick word from our sponsor. Bet Online is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports, contests, and events with first market odds and lines. Find reviews and news for every league, including Major League Baseball, NFL, NBA, NHL, combat sports, esports, and even golf. Bet Online continues to be the top online resource for all your sports information, from live in-game betting, props, and futures. Head to Bet Online today or use your mobile device to join and make your first sports bet. Use our promo code BELIEVE50, that's BLEAV50, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet Online, where the game starts. Joe, this is such a fun read. We're here. We're talking about View from the Center because we're here with the author, Tim Grunhard, former Chiefs lineman. It's such a fun read. Really, I think the best part is actually the editing, the way it was crafted. jokes aside, I think my favorite part, Tim, that epic game, you so do a good job of talking about that epic Broncos-Chiefs game, Montana-Elway, when Montana leaves him. That's the game, Joe, you had that touchdown pass. Tim, Take listeners through what you talk about, what Joe was like in the huddle and calming everybody down.
Yeah, that was a fun story. And, you know, Joe Montana is famous for getting back into the huddle and kind of loosening guys up in a tense situation. And we were certainly in a tense situation on that Monday Night Football game against John Elway. As to be really honest with you, I don't know if you remember this, Joe, but I was blocking Ted Washington, and I think Ted beat me across my face and actually caused the fumble that Marcus Allen fumbled. So I think, oh my God, number one, it was my fault that we fumbled the ball and gave the ball back to John Elway. So if we lose this game, I mean, it's going to be miserable coming back in on Monday. So that was the first thing that I was worried about. The second thing that I was worried about is, you know, that we never beat Denver up there in a long time. I mean, then never, but it's been a long time since we beat Denver up in Denver. John Elway has been the architect of many comebacks against the Chiefs. Well, he brings it down the field and scores. And then we get out there, I think it was like a minute 20 or a minute 18 or something like that left in the game. And Joe walks out there and we're pretty tense. I mean, number one is we weren't used to being in these situations. Number two, you know, John Elway has done this to us so many times. It was like, oh, here we go again. And number three, we had a long way to go. So, you know, the first thing that Joe said is, hey, listen, guys, you know, remember now the opponent here is the clock. It's not the down and distance. It's the clock, you know, so make sure you get out of bounds. And he said, oh, by the way, did you guys see those cheerleaders out there during the break? He said, did you see the chaps on those girls? He said, man, they're hot looking. And we're looking around. He's like, guys, relax a little bit. My God. He said, this is what I do. We're going to go down and we're going to score a touchdown. And that's what's going to happen. So let's go do it. And we all kind of looked at each other and we kind of smiled and said, hey, we have the number one comeback kid of all time. So let's go down and do it. And we went down and scored, and it was just a great game. But, you know, that's the kind of guy Joe Montana was. He was very confident, but he knew how to read the room or read the huddle. And he did a good job of doing that. And that's one of my favorite games. I think it might be the number one favorite game of all time. But we talk about a lot of the poker that was going on, you know, in the locker room before the game, on the sideline, and then during the game. And Joe Montana was really the guy that was dealing the cards. I mean, he was the guy that kept us focused, kept us in the game, and then obviously won the football game for us.
Joe, cool. Yeah, you know, Tim, one of the things that I loved about Joe while we're on that topic is, you know, while he was the guy who made it fun, I use him in lessons in, you know, stuff I've been doing in the corporate world ever since with people and in leadership, you know, talks. He was a guy, I never met anybody that prepared as much as he did. Like, he was deep into his career. He already won 4 Super Bowls. He had already been the MVP multiple times, right? He had done it all. He is still, in my mind, the GOAT, no doubt. I don't care what anybody says. I never saw anybody prepare as much as he did. At that age, he was still taking notes. He was always asking questions. He was prepared. He was present. Like, to me, that speaks even more volumes about that kind of leadership. And the fact that he could mix it with that fun and making it fun, and that we were playing a kid game, I think that to me was one of the ultimate leadership moments in my eyes. And I think it just goes dovetails right what you were saying about what he did in that huddle.
Yeah, Joe, a great story I don't want to get into because I don't want to give too much away that's in the book. But there's a nice story about Joe Montana, the very first time I met him, and we went out for dinner. So you got to read it to get it. But I will tell you this, I got home very, very late, and Sarah was none too happy. So the next morning I got up and went to the meeting, and I wasn't feeling that great, if you know what I mean. And I got in there, I was wearing sweatpants and a white t-shirt, probably had stains on it. My hair was all disheveled, and I walked into the room, and there's Joe Montana, who I was with until a couple hours earlier than that, to not to give away too much. He was sitting there like he was getting ready for a Gillette commercial. His hair was perfect. He was freshly shaved. He looked great. He had his notes out, and he looked at me and just shook his head. And I said, there's a pro for you. But Joe also was a guy that loved to have fun. As Joe mentioned a little bit earlier, you know, he would pull some pranks, but there was one prank that was pulled on him. I don't even know if it was a prank, but we thought it was a prank. You know, Joe's locker was right next to mine. And one day he got a poster tube from MGM and it said Rudy Rudiger on it. and like all year, that was when Rudy came out the movie, and we were pimping him the whole time about it. I said, Joe, you carried Rudy off the field. Joe, you laid your jersey on the table for Rudy to play. And he's like, that little rat bastard. We were just kind of razzing him that Rudy was the most famous guy on that football team. And he got under his skin for one reason or another. So I saw this poster board in it. I didn't put this in the book so I could tell the story, but there's a lot of stories like this in the book. So I said, you know, what am I going to do here? Because if he gets this before I do, he is never going to open this and show up. Now, this is a federal offense. Mail. But, you know, in the locker room, there's a lot of federal offenses you probably get away with. But so I opened it up, and it was a poster of the Rudy movie. And it was signed on it from Rudy. It said, to Joe, I hope you reach your dreams like I did, Rudy. And I was like, holy crap. So I put the poster up on that little chalkboard that used to sit next to between the lockers, Joe and then Joe. And Joe walked up and he said, that little son of a blank. And he took the poster, he rolled it up. He didn't rip it up. I'll give him credit for that. But that was the kind of guy Joe was. He can give it out, but he can also take it too.
That's funny. Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of locker room hijinks and stuff like that in a view from a center. Guys, let's talk about the current Chiefs a little bit. Big game coming up, Chiefs Buccaneers, Super Bowl rematch from 54. How do you guys see this game going?
Well, first of all, I just don't know where they're going to play it. I mean, I have a feeling that Tampa is going to take the brunt of this hurricane. And even if the weather's nice on Sunday, just the infrastructure and everything else and the people that are working, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be evacuating out, and they got to come back in. So there's a lot of talk about maybe playing it in Miami. It's not going to get hit as direct as Tampa is. And then they always have San Antonio that they play games in. It's kind of like a last resort. So it'll be interesting to see how that all works out as the week goes on. This is a huge game for the Kansas City Chiefs. Tampa Bay is a little banged up defensively and offensively. They just have not been hitting on all cylinders either. So this is a game where, you know, the Chiefs have got to find that momentum. They have to find a little continuity and consistency, especially on the offensive side. And special teams has been just a disaster, especially last week. I mean, that was terrible. And Joe, as you know, Marty would say all the time, you got to win in two or three areas in a football game, especially on the road. And that's either offensive defense or offensive special teams. But the Chiefs lost in two of three areas. They lost on the offensive side and they lost in special teams. And that's why you lose football games. I don't care if you're and that's the beauty of the NFL. That's why the NFL is so popular. That's why everybody loves to watch it, because any team could beat any other team on any given Sunday. You know, you know, Penn, you know, would have give Penn State a good game, but Penn State probably would win if they play each other. But in the NFL, you know, you can have an 0-5 or 0-6 or 0-7 team. you know, spark up and beat a 6-0 or 7-0 team. That's just the way the NFL is. So you got to bring your A game every game, and they just didn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, it just proof is in the pudding, right, Tim? It's been since 1972 since the team has gone undefeated. So, you know, I think it's just a chance for Chiefs fans to take a pause, say, okay, it was a debacle, right? I mean, there's really not anything that could have gone wrong, really. I haven't seen that many miscues, mistakes, weird things happen in a game. You got a backup kicker's missing stuff. They try the field goal, fake field goal. That doesn't work. The Chris Jones penalty to keep that drive alive. Like, the muff punts, like, it was a comedy of errors, right? I mean, it just – so I think she's saying just take a pause. They weren't going to go undefeated. Let's be honest, right? Even though everybody has aspirations and you want to have people at the helm saying, yes, we're going 20-0. We're going 21-0. Yeah, you want that mentality, but you have to understand they're not going to. It's been, you know, what, 50 years since a team has gone undefeated. So I think it's a chance for everybody to regroup. I think Patrick said it best. You know, we're going to learn from this, just like we always did, Tim, right? Marty came in, we learned, you got better that week, and you kind of moved on. 12 o'clock rule, right? I said that today on 8:10. And also, Tim did make a point. You brought up a great point. Special teams, man. Like, Marty, I wouldn't say that time on special teams as offense and defense, because, you know, offense and defense, you're doing 70, 80 plays in a game. And special teams, you're not. But I would say we probably spent 2/3 as much time on offense or on special teams as we did offense and defense. And it showed. It showed in the way we performed. So, you know, a lot to learn from this game. I think Chiefs fans take heart. You know, everybody had a battle. Bills lost. It just was it's a crazy week in the NFL.
Yeah, it's funny how week three a lot of times is the week of upsets. Mm-hmm. And if you look at over the – you know, the 20, 25 years of the NFL and the history of it, you see a lot of upsets. And I think a lot of it has to do with, you know, teams are starting to get tendencies on other teams. You have two games that you can look at and you can see where guys are struggling. Listen, the offensive line for the Kansas City Chiefs right now is not playing very well. Orlando Brown is struggling. He made a journeyman defensive end look like an All-American or, I mean, an All-Pro out there last week. And then even the guys inside that have been the consistent guys really didn't play very well either. You know, our defensive coordinators are over there. They're looking at saying, okay, how can we take advantage of some of the things the Chiefs aren't very good at or some of the things they struggle with? And that's what happened in the game. And I think you saw that all around the NFL is that week three is a time where teams have some – they have some video to look at. They can put together a game plan off of the first 2 weeks, and so some of these things do happen. So yeah, it's part of the process of the NFL. And listen, the NFL is the most popular sport for a reason, because like we talked about a little bit earlier, everybody has a chance to win. And then so we go into this Tampa game. They'll be interesting to do. There's going to be some adjustments that are going to have to be made by both teams, whether it's a different place to play, whether it's different travel schedule, whether it's where they're staying, hotels, if they can stay in the Tampa area, if they're going to be evacuees or staying in hotels, who knows what's going to happen. So there's going to be a lot of adjustments. A team that can make those adjustments and teams that can roll with the flow a little bit, I think it's a team that's going to win the football game. The thing that concerns me a little bit, Joe and Jeff, and this is one thing that's been rearing its ugly head a little bit, is Eric Bieniemy and Patrick Mahomes just don't seem to be on the same page a lot. And it kind of happened in the Bengal game. And now really after two weeks of kind of calm and cool collective minds, you know, you saw it rear its ugly head a little bit in week three. So, you know, and I always tell people, hey, listen, if you're a player, you know, everybody has a role. The coaches coach, the players play, the fans cheer. All right. The fans can't play. Fans can't coach. Coaches can't play and players can't coach. And I think at times players think that they, you know, because they've had success or because they know, you know, what they want to do, that they're now going to make some decisions in the coaching area. And that just doesn't work. Let the coaches coach. Listen, you can disagree, but don't be disagreeable. And it just seems to me that there's been some disagreeable actions that have been going on, and that needs to settle down. Eric Bieniemy. Maybe it's time for him to, you know, go and find a offensive coordinator job or a head coaching job in college if he can't get in the NFL, because it just doesn't seem like they're all on the same page. And hopefully that gets worked out. That is a kink and that is a worry of mine as we go into the rest of the season.
You know, I actually think a great point about the offensive issues. I think this game, first of all, it would be interesting if it shifts from Tampa, the scene of Super Bowl 55, to Miami, the scene of Super Bowl. I think it's actually going to be kind of a defensive oriented game and low scoring. I mean, the Bucs defense is playing out of their mind. They held the Packers scoreless in the second half, lost the game last week, but really impressive. And the Chiefs defense, I've actually really been impressed with. Nick Bolton played like a man with his hair on fire last week. Do you guys see? So I'm kind of seeing a low scoring game. Chiefs to eke it out. What do you guys think here?
I'm going to defer to Tim. I want to hear what his thoughts are, because I talk every week on this thing, and we're so lucky to have Tim. So what do you think, Tim?
Yeah, I think it'll be a low-scoring game, too. It'll be interesting to see how Tom Brady makes some adjustments against his Chiefs defense. The Chiefs defense is fast. It's very athletic. Now, Gay has been suspended, so that hurt a little bit. But there are some athletes on the defensive side. And listen, you know, once again, like Joe made a great point talking a little bit about just the weird things that happened. Chris Jones has got to be smarter than that. I don't know what he said. And, you know, should they have thrown a flag? I don't know. Yeah. Probably not. But you know what? It's a point of emphasis in the NFL right now. So why push the button? Why put yourself in that position? That's what this aggravates me. You got to be smarter than that. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all emotional people. I mean, you know, we're all guys that want to win football games. Listen, if you beat me in checkers, I may throw the board down on the ground. All right. But you got to be smart, and you got to make good decisions. And those are the little things that the Chiefs have got to be able to do against a guy like Tom Brady, because Tom Brady, if you're going to make some selfish mistakes, if you're not going to do your job and you're trying to do other people's job, or if you have some key penalty, Tom Brady will beat you. He's that good. So I think it's going to be a low scoring game too. I don't know. I haven't studied this game enough. I'm still licking my wounds with this Colts game, but it'll be interesting. I think this is a game of, it's going to be what team is more motivated, what team wants it more, and what team's going to go out there. And like we said a little bit earlier, the team that's going to have to make those adjustments and make those little issues that are going to crop up with this weather issue, not a big problem. And, you know, Andy Reid usually does a pretty good job of that. So I like the Chiefs just for the intangibles of this football game.
Mm-hmm. I'll just add that, Tim, that's awesome insight. Thank you. And I'll add to it. I think one of the key factors too is going to be the orneriness of Patrick Mahomes versus Tom Brady too. I think everybody in the locker room is going to be looking to those two on both sides, right? The Bucks and the Chiefs. And they're going to be looking at those two for some leadership, I think, coming off of really strange weeks, right? You know, I think everybody's obviously looking at Patrick Mahomes, what happened in that game, and his confrontation with Eric Bieniemy. So I think a lot of it's going to hinge on, and not 100%, but how the team looks at those two and how those two react. I'm really anxious to see and eager to see how they come out of the locker room and how they handle this week, most importantly. Because, you know, Tim, that's the most important. You win games from Tuesday to Saturday. You don't win games on Sunday. Absolutely. When I was coaching high school football, I used to tell the kids all the time, you don't win games on Friday night. You win in January and February and on Tuesday before the game. And I think that's going to be a lot. It's going to factor in heavy to this.
Awesome stuff. Yep, you're right.
Great analysis, guys. Tim, thanks for joining us. A View from the Center, definitely go out and read it. Chiefs fans, Tim, tell fans where they can go and get this book. And I don't know if there's a signing or upcoming that you want to mention here.
Yeah. So you can go to timgrunhart.com and you'll get an autographed a book automatically if you buy it from the website there, but you can get it at any of the brick and mortar places around Kansas City right now. At Barnes & Noble. I think they have them at Target and Walmart. They're going to have them at the Hen House, the Hy-Vee, and the Price Chopper. But if you go online to Amazon or you go online to some of the other book sites, you know, you can get it anywhere between $30 and $25, it's depending on what site you go to. But timgrunhart.com will get you an autographed copy. And like I said, guys, it was a lot of fun to write. It brought back a lot of great memories. Joe was involved with a lot of the memories. Jeff did a great job of working with the book and editing the book, and you know, him and I kind of going back and forth about some different things and the title and everything else. It was great. It all worked out well, and I'm happy that Triumph was able to help me. And then October 8th, I will have a book signing at the Barnes & Nobles in Blue Springs. Had about three or four last week. This week's a little bit slower, but we'll be out and about doing some stuff. Jack Grunny, 61.
Fantastic, Tim. Book's amazing. Everybody has to read it. young fans, older fans who followed us. It's got something for everybody. It keeps all those memories alive. The foundation, it's fantastic, Tim. Thanks for sharing all that and getting that all out of your head and heart and sharing that with the Chiefs Kingdom and beyond. So I'm sure that there's going to be a ton of folks that are going to see that just to get some perspectives on the NFL and your career. So fantastic stuff, bud. Really proud of you. It was amazing to read.
Thank you, Joe. You've been special in my life for a long, long time, you and Jen and the girls and everybody else. So thank you guys so much for having me on anytime. We'd love to pop back in here in a couple months and check back in during the holiday season. But you guys stay safe, and let's see if we can get a football victory here with the Chiefs down in Florida maybe this weekend.
Thanks so much, Tim. Well, if you enjoyed this show presented by Bet Online, please subscribe. We're available on your favorite directories, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, Luminary, and TuneIn. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.